As the water flowed over my head, I washed my hair and reveled in the liquid delight. Sitting on the edge of the tub, I dangled my feet in the water and dreamed of the moment when the great mouthpiece Bill Fallon would call from New York to tell me that my name had been cleared. From my vantage point, I could see into the kitchen. Mom and Mr. Schneiderman were drinking tea, some of which he would pour into his saucer and then, when it cooled, return to his cup. I'd seen him do this numerous times. Mom never said a thing, but I knew she regarded habits of this sort as uncouth. That's why I hesitated to persuade her that Mr. Schneiderman would make a good catch. Deciding to join them, I went to my room to change clothes and found a note from the prof and the princess regarding a job. When I opened her door, they were both sitting. She was wearing some schmatter, but he looked natty as ever, his pipe in his mouth. Exhaling a cloud of smoke, he invited me in.
"Henrietta, the princess and I have just been discussing a 2 or 3 week tour we'd like to undertake in these parts. We have in mind Vineland, Millville, Woodbine, Stone Harbor, Wildwood, working our way south to Cape May. We could use a clever assistant, someone unnoticed."
Intended as a compliment, his statement seemed to say, "You're no looker." "What's the deal?" I asked, thinking of A.R.
"The princess, who has a whimsical sense of theater, would like to hold an outdoor seance. She thinks we could draw quite a crowd, and you could be a great help to us."
"Is it dangerous?"
"Nothing more dangerous," said the prof, "than releasing a dove or two into the air and rattling some pots and pans and maybe tooting a horn. We'll pay you $2 a seance and provide free room and board."
Not wanting to abandon my mom or become thick with these frauds, I replied, "Let's try it once and see how it goes. I'll help you with Vineland." The prof looked at the princess, who nodded. That seemed to satisfy him because he said I was hired. Stupidly, I asked if Malcolm Bird would be writing any more articles praising the princess and spiritualism. It was the wrong question to ask. Almost at once, the two of them got into a tiff about Bird. I inched toward the door, but was so mesmerized by what they were saying that I stood there transfixed with my hand on the knob.
"When I said it would be wonderful for you to share your gifts with others, I didn't mean for you to take it that far," snapped the prof.
"His articles are drawing us crowds. I thought you loved it when the cash register rings."
"And don't you just love sitting there in your see-through shift, hearing the oohs and ahs of the sitters?"
"We share something far more important."
"Yes," he passionately said, his mind now somewhere else. "You've given me a mission, a cause, a sacred duty to educate the world to spiritualism.
I hope you don't doubt my devotion to the cause."
"Doubt you? I praise you," he answered with frightening fervor. "You have ushered in a new religion. You have made me feel what martyrs feel, an exaltation. Never underestimate my gratitude. It is you alone who has proved that the human spirit does not die, that I won't die. Now, ask Walter once again what I may hopefully expect when I cross over."
Removing his pipe, the prof stood still as a post, as the princess slowly rolled her head back, closed her eyes, and said,
"You've heard, Walter. Answer from the other side."
Walter's deep, gravelly voice rang out.
"A spirit life, devoid of illness, impotence, and death."
She was either one heck of a ventriloquist or the genuine article, because Walter sounded awfully convincing. It spooked me. This much I knew. It was time for an exit. In a sec, I was out of there and into the kitchen, convinced that I'd rather hear one of Mr. Schmeideman's stories about the old country than all this talk about spirits, which gave me the heebie-jeebies. Yelling hello to signal my presence, I bounded like an ape into their midst.
"What happened in Bridgeton?" Mom asked.
"Nothing special."
"Did Jimmy buy a suit?" They didn't have his size. He'll have to find one in Vineland.
Mr. Schneiderman was just telling me a story.
What's new about that, I thought. The two of them could rehash the past until it came out a souffle.
You want me to leave?
No, no, said Mr. Schneiderman. Life's too short to have secrets. In 5 minutes, everyone knows I love the opera and the Yiddish theater. In 10 minutes, they know my life story. I can't help it. That's the way I am.
What he said was perfectly true. No sooner had he moved in than he told us about losing his wife and his tailor shop and about leaving Philadelphia to seek needlework in South Jersey. He'd made us all laugh by referring to Carmel as a pimple that a good many factory owners want to pop.
His heart remained in Philly, where he said he could find opera and concerts and theater. The woods and the wilds, he lamented, were the last refuge of the slack-jawed, those ignoramuses who quoted the Bible without comprehending and who hated anyone unlike themselves. When I pointed out that the area was also home to a good many immigrants, he observed that as soon as their condition improved, they left for the cities.
I should never have become a tailor, he said. When I came to this country, I was 9 and wanted to be like my father, a teacher. But someone had to earn enough for the family.
He took off his wire-rimmed glasses and rubbed his eyes. Mom touched his hand.
I've grown old, he said, in the service of needles and sewing machines. I should have been a rabbi, not a tailor. A man should love his work. I live one day a week. The other 6, I'm dead. The Sabbath, on that day I live. In Rosnov, where I was born, our family lived in one room. And in this room, my father, a Talmudic scholar, had his little Hebrew school with 12 students. By the time I was 3 years old, I'd learned to spell out the Hebrew words. On Friday evening, on the eve of the Sabbath, I'd sit on my father's lap and he would tell me old legends and sing ancient Hebrew songs. And now, he would whisper, the week with all its evil is gone, all evil thoughts and passions departed, and from heaven the second soul comes fluttering down to dwell within you on the Sabbath. Such mysterious words always scared me. I would clutch at my chest trying to touch this heavenly soul.
He paused and closed his eyes. Mom stared into her teacup. I studied the grain in the table.
Before retiring, he said, I like to sit and read the evening paper. After a while, I fold up the newspaper, put away my glasses, and listen to my record of Fritz Kreisler playing the Beethoven violin concerto. And pretty soon, I'm in Rosnov, on my father's lap.
Luckily, the phone rang. Excusing myself, I wiped the tears from my eyes and got on the honker. AR was ringing up from New York. We had agreed on a code in case our party line proved tempting to snoops.
Your cousin Amos is performing tomorrow night at 8. If you'd like to see him, I'll get you tickets.
The meaning? The jewels and cash would be collected at 8 the following evening.
Boy, was I glad.
At 7:45 the next night, while Jimmy and his friends sat on the porch playing pinochle and Mom and Mr. Schneiderman were having one of their regular talks in the kitchen, I stood outside under the catalpa tree. On Littleton Avenue we had one also, and I used to pick the pods and pretend they were Havana cigars. A little past 8, Joe Mazzeria and Salvatore Zucchania pulled up in a black Avondale touring car, luxuriously appointed with Belgian brass trimmings and upholstered in heavy fawn broadcloth. It had Gabriel snubbers, cowl parking lamps, and bulletproof glass. 2 bodyguards with facial scars and tattooed hands slid from the car. Each was wearing a coat jacket that bulged with a rod. Asking my name, one of them knocked on the window, a signal that brought Mazzeria and Zucchania out in the open. Mazzeria, garishly attired in plaid slacks, a purple silk shirt, and patent leather shoes, had risen in the mafia from gunman to one of the Mustache Pete's bosses. Squat and fat, he'd survived numerous attempts on his life,
the most recent from the racketing bark of a Thompson submachine gun. According to the Police Gazette, this porcine racketeer was both unstable and stupid, but not so his second-in-command, Zucanier. Salvatore Zucanier had emigrated from Palermo at 9 with his hard-working family to the Lower East Side. By 14, he was a truant, schooled in violence and venality by poverty and tenement life. Sal was both short, 5'7", and tough. He had brown eyes, black hair, and a drooping right eyelid. When I met him, he was a 25-year-old ex-con who murdered the King's English. Slender and dangerously handsome, he dressed like a doctor or lawyer, but his fancy suits couldn't hide his reputation for mayhem. Modeling himself after A.R., who regarded crime as a business, he put profit before prejudice. Unlike Miseria, he had no objection to working with non-Italians. All money is green, he said, whether it comes from a Cohen or a Mark Antonio. Wearing a tan summer suit, he carried an attaché case. On his wrist, a gold-groon watch. Zucchini is the name, he said, extending a hand to me. Salvatore, this here is a Mr. Miseria, the boss. We walked to the house with the gorillas trailing behind. Miseria said he'd rather not enter. He was in a hurry. He wanted the ice. I pointed them to some chairs on the porch and went upstairs to my room, where I removed the geranium covering the jewels and the cash. Counting them for the umpteenth time, I put them back in the sock as Jimmy slipped into my room. Something had to be up, because only an earthquake could make him leave a card game. He would even complain when the other players paused to stretch or went off to pee.
They speak Italiano, I hear. The fat short one, he no like the Jews. He said they take the girl with us, until the stuff, whatever that mean is for sure. You no able to trust the Hebrews, he said. He then make the sign of the cross. The second guy, he say no. He say she one of us, but the first one say he's the boss.
I'll hide in the woods. Tell Mr. Schneiderman. Pausing just long enough to take my pocketbook out of the closet, I bolted for the stairs. Too late. Coming up the steps was Miseria.
Tell me, kid, you know any good roadhouses nearby? I want a steak as big as a steer.
I haven't lived here very long, but my guess is the closest would be Philadelphia.
That dump, scoffed Miseria. It's no better than Bridgeport. Come on, we'll treat you to a porterhouse and then bring you back.
Pointing to the sock, he said, the ice in there?
No, I'll get it for you.
I took a step toward my room. As fast as a cobra strike, he grabbed the sock and opened the knot.
Lion kike, he said, and counted the diamonds. 15, and the cash, 5 G's.
There should have been 16, except there is money to cover the missing diamond.
At least you ain't got sticky fingers. For that, I'll buy you a $2 dinner. Let's go.
Seizing my arm, he led me down the stairs. When I told him that I wasn't feeling in the pink, a gross understatement, he shoved me off the porch towards the car. The others were cooling their heels under a tree.
Get in.
Zucchania, seeing me shanghaied, protested. Miseria, furious, ordered the two apes into the car, where they hemmed me in like cement blocks. I just sat there praying Zucchania had the power of tongues. Although the rear windows were rolled down, I couldn't understand a word they were saying. It was all Italian. When Zucchania slid in behind the wheel, I knew that his words had not won the war.
Hetty!
Someone cried as Zucchania started the engine. Bounding out of the house and across the lawn, his black needle bag in hand and a gauze mask on his face, like those worn during the Spanish flu epidemic which had killed millions a few years before, Mr. Schneiderman poked his head in the rear window.
What are you doing out of bed? You know how contagious influenza is.
Sorry, Dr. Schneiderman, I said.
You'll put these poor men into quarantine.
Not if I don't cough, I said, and immediately I began to cough, pausing only long enough to sing the ditty that most Americans now knew by heart. I had a little bird whose name was Linda. I opened up the window, an influenza. Maziria cried, get her out of here. The two bodyguards roughly ejected me from the car, which departed in a wheel-spinning cloud of dust.